Hi, I'm Dr. Casey Mixon, Assistant Professor at Valdosta State University and Project Director for the Military Families Learning Network Family Development Team. We created this podcast to provide a space not only to learn about timely topics faced by military families, but also to explore accessible resources. Anchors throughout history have been a symbol of stability and groundedness. We hope our episodes provide you with a bit of respite to think about how the topics can influence your professional and personal growth. So sit back, relax, and get anchored with us. Today's episode focuses on military families, specifically when they're transitioning into the civilian workforce or wanting to go into higher education. We were lucky enough to have two guests join us. Christine, or Cece Gallagher, will be sharing not only her experience as an active duty military spouse navigating through the civilian work world, but also tips and resources that she's found helpful as she's journeyed through various military-related transitions. And I'll also speak with Molly Herndon from the MFLN personal finance team, who further highlights employment resources for military families, as well as information about the Forever GI Bill and repayment plans. To give you a bit of insight into our first guest, Christine, or Cece Gallagher, is a highly accomplished, enthusiastic leader and recognized expert who is dedicated to improving the quality of life for military families across multiple industries. Cece currently wears and has worn many hats, as an entrepreneur, an IT project manager, professor, academic advisor, a communication strategist, and a military family advocate. Her knowledge and expertise has led to many opportunities where she could make a tangible difference in the quality of life of active duty service members and their families. She has been a professional resource for the White House's Joining Forces Initiative, the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the Department of Labor, members of Congress, global and national professional and nonprofit organizations. She's also been helpful to universities, state legislatures, and city councils. Cece is also the spouse of an active duty Army soldier and a mother to two military children. She has experienced many military moves in a decade of marriage, two deployments, and countless extended separations. She's come to know the importance of military family quality of life issues at a very tangible and personal level. Cece was also recently a panelist in one of our 2019 MFLN virtual conference sessions titled The Family Readiness System and You. Cece, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction.
It's pretty exciting having you here, given all those many hats that you wear and have worn. But would you mind, and I know I gave quite a bit of background, but would you mind telling our listeners a bit about yourself?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would love to. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It is an absolute honor to be here with you. And I just want to thank you so much for all the hard work that you all do every day on behalf of our military community. So to dive a little bit deeper into my background, professionally, I have an undergraduate degree and a master's degree in advertising and communications. And I married my service member, active duty soldier, right out of graduate school. And it was then that I realized as I moved to Middle Tennessee that there was not corporate America what I was looking for. I landed amongst farm fields and trying to figure out, like, what am I going to do out of grad school? What is my next step in my professional career? And so it threw me into teaching in higher education, into an industry where I had exposure to that in graduate school, but I never really thought of it as a full profession. So it was an incredible position. And in fact, I do keep in touch with many students that I had there. But we started off our marriage at Fort Campbell, Kentucky about 10 years ago. And from there, we moved to Fort Rucker, Alabama, and I taught in higher education there. And then we pivoted to the Washington, D.C. area, which was an incredible experience. And I knew at that time that I wanted to transition my skill set to a different industry. The military life provides so many opportunities as you move from place to place, and it allows you the opportunity to really redefine who you are and what you want to do with your life, whether that's personally or professionally. So as we PCS to DC, I transitioned my skill set and I was hired at an incredible organization called the National Military Family Association, working on their government relations staff and truly advocating and educating and collaborating with members of Congress, the Defense Department on military family quality of life issues. And more importantly, and specifically focusing on self-employment and education, which is a major barrier within our community with the amount of moves that we do endure. I was on their team for about a year and then was hired by the fourth largest veteran service organization in America called the Military Officers Association of America. And it was at this position where we planned career and education conferences for spouses across the country. I led their communication outreach for military families, both focusing on print and digital media. I hosted an advisory council of active duty spouses in the DC area to help push our legislative agenda, focusing on those issues that our families faced within our generation. We received orders out of DC, as the typical Army will do, and my husband received orders to Fort Carson, Colorado. And it was at that time where, unfortunately, the organization I was working with couldn't sustain my employment as a remote employee. So, of course, here we go again on my third or fourth position out of grad school. We're in our third or fourth location. And I was questioning, you know, what should I do with my life at this point? And I think it was at that point where I was crying on the kitchen floor, asking my husband, why are we moving again? You know, we move so often. And my husband said, Cece, why don't you just launch a consulting business where you can continue to work with these amazing organizations. You can continue to work with people who want to support the community who just don't know how, or they don't know how to scale their programs, or they don't know how to vet certain organizations. So it was at that moment, in that pivotal moment, that I launched an organization called Military Quality of Life Consulting, where I equip professional organizations and nonprofit organizations to greater fulfill their mission of serving our military community. And at the same time as I'm logging onto LegalZoom and registering my LLC, my resume was pushed out by a few professional resources. And I was lucky enough to start interviewing for other full-time positions and landed at a defense contracting organization called BAM Technologies, who's an incredible organization. But I landed there as an IT project manager, supporting two major efforts, the Military Spouse Employment Partnership and the Military Spouse Transition Program. So I was working full-time for them remotely, and then I had the side business, side hustle, I guess you could call it, where I would work on small passion projects as we moved and as we experienced this military life. And so fast forward, we moved to Colorado Springs. We then PCS'd to Fort Irwin, California. And most recently, we moved to Fort Bliss, Texas, which is where I'm calling in from today. And I have since transitioned from that position in IT project management, and I've gone full-time within my consulting business as of 2 months ago. So it's been certainly a whirlwind of an experience, and I've had some pretty incredible opportunities to work with some just amazing people who want to create larger impact within the community. So,
wow. So did I count right? That was six moves, six PCSs.
Six moves, six PCSs. Wow. Yeah. And then next month will be our 10-year anniversary. And our family, we've never been stationed overseas. We've always been stateside. We've always been CONUS, but coast to coast. And we've lived in places, massive metropolitan areas, all the way to the middle of the Mojave Desert. So we've been in just such diverse geographic locations, yeah, across the United States, places we never thought we would live.
Which in itself has its own, you know, types of transitions and, you know, financial barriers. How did you kind of, what did the process look like, if you don't mind sharing, with your spouse and even, you know, with, how old are your children?
Well, yeah, so we have two boys. One, our oldest is five. So he just entered into kindergarten on this move this fall. And our other son is two. So he's still a little guy, but yes, they have our five-year-old, this is his, he was born in Virginia, has lived in Colorado, California. This is his fourth home, and he's five. Our life has transitioned. We have transitioned many times, and it's neat because our kids certainly get to see, again, different parts of the country. They get to be exposed to different cultures and people who love them, right? And who are very much part of our community. So it's a neat experience.
And it sounds like as you were, you know, telling your story that you were able to be adaptable and you had, you know, the support of your husband who encouraged you to, you know, start the consulting business. But I'm wondering, yeah, you know, early on, you know, when you're maybe you were dating or in the marriage, were you aware of what military life would entail? That's a loaded question, but specific, yes, to career, what that would look like. And then also kind of an add on to that, did you, mm-hmm, know to strategize, you know, with what the communication and kind of strategy that needed to happen in your marriage to, mm-hmm, be, mm-hmm, successful at navigating the career world for you specifically?
Sure. Wow. So many good questions wrapped up into that. So I will definitely try to answer them as I go. But the first one I'll certainly address, was I aware of what that military life would entail as we entered into dating and our engagement and marriage? And I hate to say this, but I had zero idea. My parents were not in the military. I didn't have immediate family who served, per se. And, you know, even though I didn't know what this life would entail, I certainly would never change a thing. But I do get that response a lot, that, you know, people always say, you knew what you were getting into once you married into it. And I don't know if that's true, because there's so many moments in this life that you cannot plan for. And so I'm certainly being very vulnerable and open, and I hope that's okay. Yeah. But, you know, we've endured, you know, multiple deployments, and nothing can really prepare you for sending yourself off to war, right? Like it's terrifying, you know, for me at least, and maybe other people feel differently. But when you're separated from your spouse for long periods of time through those deployments, or even the trainings or the temporary duties that lead up to, whether that's a deployment or whatever that looks like for your service member, it can be very difficult. You know, you're also facing, when you have young children, the emotional highs and lows of your kids, and helping them understand what it means to serve the greater good, right? Like why daddy is not home, or why we won't see him for a little bit of time. So it can be a very difficult life in that regard, but no, I wasn't aware, but I wouldn't change a thing, because it allows our family to serve a greater purpose. And I think, you know, the bottom line is, you know, service to our nation is something that both my husband and I value. And that's something that we try to teach our kids. And as far as the second question that you asked is how, I believe it was about like how we communicate, my husband and I, in terms of the professional portfolio. Well, I would say we try to be a resilient family. We have better days than some, right? We have hard days. We have better days that look much better than others. But yeah, my husband and I, we do communicate a lot on that. And he's extremely supportive of my professional career as well. So that I am grateful for. He knows that I feel like I'm a better spouse, a better wife, a mom, a friend, a family member, a contributor to society when I am working. And I just happen to be married to someone who serves that calling and who might not be around as often, but understands the need of service and sacrifice go hand in hand. But we do communicate a lot. And we do also redefine what success looks like and our family a lot as well. Because again, through the moves, or maybe it's through adding a new family member to our crew, you know, like we talk about what does success look like. And certainly in my professional career and through all of the different experiences I've had, I haven't, you know, each year looks different. I've excelled during some years, I've maintained in others. And launching into full-time into my consulting business with a conversation that we had several months ago, because I needed to figure out a way to create more flexibility and financial freedom within our family. And so entrepreneurship was really the way for me to go to define that with what we needed. So we redefine success a lot every step of the way. You have to, you really have to, because you don't want to be, I would hate to say this word, but you don't want to be resentful, or you don't want to be angry, and you don't want to be just having that bad perspective of life, because this life does afford some incredible opportunities.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So one of the things that we do with Military Families Learning Network initiative mm-hmm. is to really focus on community capacity building. You know, I'm sure with all the work that you're doing, that's kind mm-hmm. of a buzzword mm-hmm. that you hear a lot. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that I've seen and our team has seen that we've been able to do that, or that we try very hard to do in our MFLN family development work, is to mm-hmm. create knowledge, you know, skills, awareness, and trainings that are also mm-hmm. helpful for civilian employers and even mm-hmm. higher education, universities, colleges within universities, programs within universities, to be more military inclusive and military connected, mm-hmm. to combat a lot of those barriers in transitions yeah. that you are mm-hmm. that you've gone through personally, but mm-hmm. that in your work I know that you've seen others go through. And then just by virtue of being in a military family community, I'm sure you have tons of stories of the hardships and sacrifices just in, you know, maybe with yeah. people that you know. And as you're talking about just how hard it is to send your spouse mm-hmm. off to war, or mm-hmm. even any kind of deployment and any kind of separation, it's not mm-hmm. something that civilian employers or even mm-hmm. kind of university systems, they're not educated or aware of the mm-hmm. military culture. Mm-hmm. That right. may not be mm-hmm. something that they know to support you on.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so I'm wondering if you kind of have any tips or maybe even examples mm-hmm. of how you've been supported in various career paths or, mm-hmm. you know, examples or even tips of how to help that type of community capacity building effort.
That's a great question. And yes, that's a great question. I have had the opportunity to work on large scale programs focusing on spouse employment. And what I love about one of the ones I had the opportunity to work on, called the Military Spouse Employment Partnership, and it is hosted by the Defense Department under Military OneSource. It's a consortium of these employers who are dedicated to hire, promote, retain military spouses as we go through this life. And what I loved about working and supporting that team is that it brought cultural competency to those employers. They did an annual event in DC, where everyone came in and they talked about our community. And I thought it was so neat to see that group of organizations really rally behind our community. And I'm forever grateful for the Defense Department, not only because I was able to support their IT efforts as a defense contractor and support that team, who is incredible, but just to see that the conversation still continues and remains. There's organizations like Hiring Our Heroes who are doing great things in the community and connecting those local installations to the communities surrounding those installations where military and their families are present. And there is a million other organizations who I'd love to go into and provide resources on that we could attach to the podcast. But I think just having the awareness, you know, of the military lifestyle, I believe there is a resource from Psych Armor, and they do training for employers. And I'm going to look into that and also provide you that resource.
Our team's very familiar. That's actually, I'm glad you brought it up. That's one of the ways that we are, our MFLN family development team is utilizing some of the Psych Armor training awesome. For our university. So we kind of provide not only our MFLN trainings, but also, you know, they have like a, you know, 10 things veteran families want you to know. And
I love it. Okay.
Yeah. And specifically for higher ed, there's a whole kind of collection of training that has to do with financial aid for military dependent.
Yeah. I think outside of that, you know, from my personal experience, I have, as a spouse, you know, you can look at my resume and see that I have many and multiple jobs post my formal education in locations that are questionable as far as why you would move there. And it's kind of a, you know, a giveaway. I would be a military spouse or somewhat associated with the military with the amount of moves and locations. But I have seen, unfortunately, you know, discrimination firsthand in that way. And as mentioned before, I've had to walk away from positions I really wasn't ready to leave due to, you know, government issued orders for my service member. And I remember many times when I had to walk away from those positions, I'd be so extremely sad and I would cry and, you know, I would ask my husband, why do you hate me? Like, why are we moving again? But I had to remember it, and a friend gave me this great advice, it's that it's not his choice. And I know that, and it's the job. And so it's like I've learned over time that I can't be mad at him. And I can be, I love the Army, but I can certainly be upset with the Army at some point in our career, because that's just the way it, that's the way our life is. And, you know, again, I wouldn't change it, but there are some challenges with it. So I think if employers were able to promote that they were military friendly on visible web landing pages, I think that helps. If they're part of organizations such as the Military Spouse Employment Partnership or Hiring Our Heroes, or they work with local nonprofits to support spouse hiring, I think boasting that in a public way is incredible. I think for those organizations who may have local entities around an installation, they should surely reach out to the Army Community Center or the Airmen and Family Readiness Center based on, you know, what service or what installation branch of service is in that area. I also think it would be great if they could create, if there's an application process and a spouse is applying, maybe there's an identifier that they could put on there, knowing that there are military spouse coming into their community. And I also would love to see more employers offer remote type of positions. Because after several, you know, on ground positions based on where we were, I realized that a non-negotiable for me was to have a remote position, because I knew we would move so much and I knew that I needed to be more present for my family as we grew it. So I started realizing, as we redefined success a lot, you know, remote work is non-negotiable. And I certainly can travel, but I can't do it that often because my spouse, the demands of his career are very high. So I hope that helps a little bit and kind of gives you some ideas or tips of maybe what an employer could do.
Absolutely. And then also really kind of reiterating how your CV or your resume, you know, mm-hmm. how you've had to be kind of a chameleon and adapt to a lot of mm-hmm. the areas. And that kind of goes into what are some of the things that you've noticed, maybe your experience or what you've noticed, not only with a lot of in your consulting, but also in your mm-hmm. own experience in dealing with employment opportunities, going from maybe larger places, like you said, with DC to more rural mm-hmm. areas, mm-hmm. like you were talking about in Middle Tennessee.
Yeah. So my experiences from coast to coast, again, living in those very metropolitan areas all the way to the Mojave Desert, each place looked a little bit different, and our family dynamic looked a little bit different, and the military mission looked very different at each location. Again, when I started out right out of grad school and moved to these more rural, what I thought was rural at the time, you know, it threw me into higher education. So I started down this one career path and I loved it. And I knew I loved educating and I loved developing and I loved being a part of that future growth for that next generation. And again, when we moved to DC, just having the incredible opportunities through my work to lift the voice of military families, to educate those in influential areas, made such an incredible difference personally, but also throughout our community. And so, you know, in DC, we had a wonderful experience there. I felt more of a civilian there, I think, than I did in the military. And many people might say that if they're, you know, if their service member is doing a fellowship or some specialized job there. But it was at that point when we left, when I, as I mentioned before, just redefining what my work experience needs to look like, and remote work was it. So, you know, Colorado Springs was an incredible place at Fort Carson because it was a major city. But at that time I was working remotely for an IT company and I had my consulting business. And then at Fort Irwin, again, where we just moved from, if I didn't work remotely, I'm not sure what I would have done there, because you either support the installation because it's such a remote location, and it's the home of the Army's National Training Center. So it's in the middle of the desert. You can envision what life may be like there, 120 degrees in the summers. And it replicates the warfighting experience that these soldiers or any other visiting services there for training experience when they deploy overseas. It's really incredible what they do there. But for families, it's extremely remote. You either would work on the installation, you'd work remotely, which I had many peers who did that outside of their home, or maybe you go back to school virtually, or you know, try to take a different career path at those remote locations. But again, I was very lucky to work from home. And so that in and of itself was a blessing to our family. I will say one of the challenges that I did have, because, you know, many spouses, they look for those opportunities, is we were on the Pacific coast, we were on Pacific time zone, and my office was on the East Coast time zone. And I had to work East Coast hours. And so with two little kids, it made it very difficult to kind of build that schedule for us. So I was up at 4:30, 5 in the morning working prior to my kids waking up. And then I would take them to daycare around 6:30-ish, 7. And then I would work the rest of the day. And that was really challenging for me. And at that location, my husband was not home a lot. He was probably gone 90% of the month. So when you talk about managing solo parenting, being the default parent, you know, and working full time and trying to navigate different time zones and being a professional and trying my best to kind of balance all of these different responsibilities, I felt burnout there. And that's what launched me into my consulting business full time, is I really just had to redefine what that looked like for our family. And I'm really happy I did it. It was the best decision I think I've made for a while. So but burnout's a real thing. So I'm trying not to get to that point again.
And advocating for your own career needs, but also your family's emotional needs and just time needs. It is.
That's it.
Takes a tremendous amount of, you know, courage in having to like assert yourself, but also, you know, there can be risk involved because it's your own business and it falls on your shoulders, which you're already juggling so much.
Right.
I'm also wondering, especially with you talking about time zones working remotely, I'm wondering what that would look like for military spouses who are on installations overseas too, you know?
Right.
Friends, like if someone was in Okinawa, 13 hour ahead difference. If they had
absolutely.
I mean, wow. And managing household, you know?
100%. Those spouses who are doing that, kudos to them, because it would not be easy. And I was only 3 hours west. It's not like I was in a different country, but we were not in a different country. But it just, even a couple hours, you know, ahead of where my headquarters was and where our clients were, that was really difficult because I felt like I was on call 24 hours a day. The spouses who are located around the globe, again, we haven't been stationed overseas, but kudos to them because it's not easy. And I don't know if I would ever say that there's balance between all of the different aspects of life, because I feel as if it's work-life integration. And some days you're a better mom, some days you're an awesome employee, some days you're a better wife. For me, I never feel like I'm the best at everything in one day. So it's taken me a long time to realize that. But, you know, but as long as I give it my all and show up and therefore, you know, our family, number one, I think that is success.
That's wonderful. I'm really wondering what tips or advice or where did you draw that you just talked about burnout and especially those rural areas and especially when your spouse was away and you had to be the default parent. Where did you draw your support?
That's a great question. A lot of my peers and friends ask that as well. Like, how do you manage it all? And how do you make it work? And I will tell you, I'm the queen of outsourcing. And I have learned this because I know that I can't be all to everyone. And again, it's taken me a long time to figure that out. And when you look at our community, you look at incredible professionals, moms and dads, you look at, we're volunteers, not only within our, you know, our children's school systems or the local church that we go to or the unit that we are part of. So we wear so many hats, and I learned that I can't do it all. So things that I outsource, and again, because, and it's only because I work and we have this a second income in the household, but I look for help inside the home. So we have a housekeeper that helps me, you know, do things inside the home so I can work and be there and enjoy my kids. We've even at some installations, I've had people who have helped us food prep for the week, because we know how long it takes to go to the grocery store and chop up food and prepare the whole week of meals. So I've outsourced that before. I've had help in other areas of my life, more on the personal side, but I've outsourced and have seen therapists, even life coaches, people who can help you. And in my case, like, help me define what that success looks like and how I can improve our life and how I can just live my best life every day, right? So I've gone to therapists, I've utilized life coaches through Military OneSource. And in fact, that's probably my favorite resource that I give to whoever asks, because I've worked with the same life coach through three or four different moves. And every time my professional portfolio looked different, our family dynamic looked different, and she was able to kind of help me mold and shape what my schedule looked like, or incorporate healthy habits of going to the gym or healthier eating, or, you know, any of those tips that help you feel better. That was a great resource. And I also tried to build a network every place that we go with other military families around us. And we're all really tight knit because we're all going through the same thing. And I think you realize once you open up and you meet people who might be in the same life phase, or your neighbors or whoever that is, people want to help. They just don't know how. So you have to just ask, in my opinion. And people can ask me for help whenever they want, because I will certainly step in. But I lean on a lot of resources, and I try to outsource as much as I can to where I don't feel burnout, to where I feel supported as a solo parent often. And I think I just am, I'm to the point where I am done feeling bad about it. Before, I was like, well, I can't spend the money on this, or I can do it all. And I think I just got to the point where it's like, I don't have to do it all. Yeah. I can build a tribe that helps us and that makes our family thrive. And that's really key for us for success, at least me.
And it sounds like too, with the life coach through Military OneSource, that person was able to remain a constant despite all the various changes that you were going through, which,
yeah,
yay for technology on that front, right?
100%. And she has just been incredible. Yes, I adore her. And the service for military families, Military OneSource is an incredible resource, and it's free for us. So I look at, okay, what can I leverage to be the best version of myself? And that is definitely one resource that I've tapped into. And then also along the lines of coaches and Military OneSource, they have a department called Spouse Education and Career Opportunities, where they offer free career coaching. Mm-hmm. So not only have I leveraged their life coaches, but as I went full-time into entrepreneurship and as I was going through this transition, I called the CECO program. And I said, I really want to speak to an entrepreneurship coach, someone who has experience in this realm. And they connected me with someone who I meet with on a monthly basis and who's able to coach me through like what my next steps are. And we did assessments to figure out my strengths and weaknesses. And that resource has been a blessing as well. So yes, there are lots of resources that I have leveraged. So.
And I'm wondering too, if, you know, one of the things that I've learned about military spouse careers, especially if they have careers that require certifications or licenses that vary from state to state or country to country, if they're overseas, is that there are some places that just don't honor them in all the work and the education and the certification trainings and everything that person did for their career to be in that particular field or industry. They're not able to translate once they, you know, move for for PCS. And so one of the initiatives that I think is so great is with community capacity building on a larger scale is to like not only talk to employers, but also talk to those organizations or help create awareness with those organizations that provide certifications or licenses to be kind of military friendly. I'm wondering if the Military One Source, you know, career counselors are helpful with that piece of it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And I would tell advice I'd give to spouses is call them and ask if they can help. But I do want to mention another resource as you talk about license recognition across state lines. Through my consulting business, I am wrapping up a project right now with prime contractors, Mayer and Mayer, but they're supporting the U.S. Department of Labor. And DOL has this massive push for military spouse license recognition options. And they have a website at veterans.gov/milspouses. And they have a guide for spouses that you can download, and it walks you through the step-by-step process of how to figure out what that, whether it's that license recognition, what that looks like to the state that you're PCSing to. So whether it's reciprocity or they issue a temporary license or whoever that, whatever that looks like, they've created resources that will push and navigate spouses to find it faster. And they've also educated American Job Centers. They're working with folks who work at licensing boards. They're doing some incredible work in this space just to ensure that military spouses are a represented population within the state. So that would be a resource I totally would push spouses to if they do work at those licensed occupations.
That's great. We'll definitely include those in our additional resources. Those are great resources. What scholarship programs are available for spouses? You know, we'll be talking about the GI Bill later on in today's episode, but do you have any that you'd recommend or that you've used that are for specifically for military spouses that are trying to advance their careers?
Absolutely. And that's a great question because oftentimes spouses will want to advance their education or certification or obviously license as we move from state to state or country to country. And I will say, obviously there's the MyCAA scholarship, My Career Advancement Account Scholarship, which is hosted through, again, that DOD, Department of Defense resource through Spouse Education and Career Opportunities. And that only includes a specific rank of the service member, but a spouse can qualify for up to, I think it's $4,000 for their education on what they want to do. So the MyCAA scholarship is one that I recommend. The organization, the National Military Family Association, one that I worked for previously, they have an incredible top-notch scholarship program, and that's for spouses of any rank and any component. It's also for entrepreneurship, the spouses who go into entrepreneurship. So definitely look them up, and I believe it's on a rolling basis. So check them out. Other organizations like the Pat Tillman Foundation, they have spouses for scholarships as well. But there's a great tool, and I keep going back to this, but the Spouse Education and Career Opportunities website has a scholarship finder just for spouses.
Oh, wow.
So if you log on to their website, and it will be on there, but you can filter and look for different scholarship programs that are available. And oftentimes at the last place, when you move to the installation, check out the local spouse club. Because they'll do, many of them, not all of them, but many of them will offer scholarships to spouses locally.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and ask the education center as well on your local installation. And even the universities, if you're going to a higher education university, sometimes their veterans office will have information on scholarship opportunities. So hopefully that provides a few different areas to get spouses started, but it's just kind of working through the system and trying to be your own best advocate when it comes to that.
And really navigating through that system. That leads to my next question is, what skills do you think are most important that you either had or developed or while being in an active duty military family that have been just so useful in being job ready and really kind of adapting and evolving your career really as you went through a lot of transitions as a military spouse?
Great question. Different gosh, having worked across different industries, so different skills that I would hope, as a military spouse, grit, I think, is definitely a key aspect of life. But I think more importantly, being adaptable, taking initiative, and being your own best advocate, taking the reins of your career. Because what I have learned is that the Army is going to dictate, you know, where my husband goes, what the job is, where he needs to be, and what he needs to show up for, whatever that may look like. And although they do provide support services for the spouse or dependent, you have to really take the reins of what's going to make you happy and what's going to make you feel fulfilled. And oftentimes we can put ourselves last because we're taking care of everyone else around us. So I encourage spouses who listen to this, please take initiative, and whatever that flame is in your stomach or in your heart of who you were prior to marrying in the military, take that and run with it and don't apologize for it. And so taking initiative is a big key skill, being dependable and loyal, being able to network. And all of these skills I feel like are learned throughout our life cycle here, but networking, relationship building, and of course being organized, because we're navigating so many different changes. Every aspect of our life changes when we move, or when there's a deployment or a separation or a training with our service member. So it's being able to manage all aspects of life, and military spouses do it very, very well. So I encourage them to take those skills and leverage those as they look for employment or as they look to go back to school, but find what it is that makes you happy and take it and run with it and be your own best advocate with it.
And part of being that your own best advocate, you spoke to this a little bit earlier, is being kind to yourself and reaching out, or being kind to yourself, knowing that you are shouldering so many responsibilities and wearing so many hats. You don't have to, we're human. We get to
not. We're human, yeah. Right.
We're not perfect at everything all the time, but you get up each day and do it,
Yeah.
Of your ability.
And I think you just said a word that I'd love to expand on, but self-care. I think you just said that. And if you didn't, I'm just going to expand on that too. But self-care is absolutely an important aspect of this life as well. And it's going to look different every place that you go. So for instance, when we moved to Fort Irwin, California, again, this really remote island installation in the middle of the Mojave Desert, 50 miles from the closest town, down one desert road. When we moved there, I was heartbroken because I had never been a desert person, never lived in the desert. I didn't understand what life was like there. It was a very harsh environment, very harsh training schedule for us. And I was having a really hard time dealing situationally with where we were. I had a great job. Our kids were, healthy and for the most part. And of course, outside of all the flus and sicknesses and strep throats and all that stuff. But I had a really hard time creating a new identity there because I didn't, just the situation that we were in, it was very difficult for me. So self-care there for me looked like working out multiple times during the week. I poured a lot of my energy into maintaining, healthy habits in that way. Now that we've moved, let's say, to Fort Bliss, Texas, and we have access to resources, I sign up for massages every couple of weeks because I know that's going to help alleviate stress, or a facial, or I have access to get my nails done. So things that are nice and kind to yourself, if you have the opportunity to do that, do it. And because you have to maintain, your best self for everyone else around you, it's okay to take time for yourself to build up that self-care plan and define what that is at your installation and in your life where you are right now.
And redefine it, because I'm sure access and accessibility to things that you want to do for self-care in DC is going to look different.
Oh yeah.
Is going to look differently than maybe some of those rural areas where visiting monuments for free,
right?
And having access to all of that stuff in DC versus, being in the desert.
Right. So it looks differently.
And
that's an important piece. Mm-hmm.
That takes energy, and when you may not have it, what an important component to, mm-hmm. like you said, to thriving and taking mm-hmm. care of yourself so that you can be there for the rest of your family mm-hmm. and for your job and all of those many areas that you have important roles in.
Absolutely. And I know I work optimally and I show up for my family the best when I'm able to take that time. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, for some people, self-care might be reading a book, or it might be reading a magazine, or taking 20 minutes to listen to a podcast, or, you know, listen to an ebook or whatever that looks like. But it's figuring out what that looks like at that installation or wherever you may be, and taking the first step into building those healthy habits, maybe scheduling it in once every couple of weeks or once a week and just trying to build healthy habits. But I think the other piece is, like, you know, I've been in those times where I felt helpless and I didn't know where to turn to. And so you just have to find your tribe. You've got to reach out for help if you feel that way. And then that way you can build your resiliency and you can get the right resources, because there are resources out there. You just have to access them. So, yeah.
Do you have any other tip or advice to give to either other military spouses or even the helping professionals that work with military families?
For the military spouse population, my advice would be, and what I had mentioned before, is find something that makes you happy and find something that makes you excited, what professionally, if that's where you want to go, or if it's that phase in life where you want to take a step back from your career and just be okay with that. But I would say just, you know, try to focus as much as you can on yourself, because the military will try to take, you know, as much energy or whatever that is from you. So just try to harness what you can to make yourself happy. Focus on you and your family. For those who work with spouses, I would say coming into the fold with empathy and just trying to understand, you know, what this life looks like and what that spouse could have gone through, and just areas of where they could help, or just reaching out to say a friendly hello or following back up with spouses that you may be working with, I think goes a long way. When we move to these new installation areas and we're trying to figure out life here, we don't always know people. We don't always know where to go or where the best resources are locally. So having a touch point for us is incredible. And having someone just reach out to say hello, I think is just super and fantastic.
Thank you so much, Cece. I've really, I'm very grateful that you were gracious enough to share about your journey. And I appreciate you providing that experience and your wisdom to our listeners as well. I think that it'll be incredibly helpful.
Thank you, Casey, so much for having me. This was a pleasure. And I hope I was able to provide some good insight and resources to your audience. I appreciate the opportunity. I really do.
We'll be sure to link an additional resources page to today's episode webpage, as well as the link to the virtual conference session that CC served as a guest panelist on. But for now, let's turn our attention to an initiative that you may be familiar with called the Military Reach Project. It's based out of Auburn University, and the overarching mission is to make research accessible and to help get needed information into the hands of military families and also helping professionals who work on behalf of military families. They published something within the Military Reach Project called a TRIP report, which stands for Translating Research into Practice. One of the Military Reach TRIP reports reviewed research literature on the effects of job relocation on military spouse careers. And their research specifically explored data after military change of stations. So we've posted this TRIP report on today's podcast website, but we wanted to highlight a few of the key findings the TRIP report focused on. So this particular study examined data on over 300,000 civilian spouses of active duty service members within a 12-year period. And researchers found that there was a large gap in annual pay between service members and their working spouses. So on average, the total military pay income was approximately $55,000, and their spouses who were in the workforce made on average $23,000. Researchers also found that older wives, specifically wives, experienced larger declines in income than younger spouses after a PCS move. They also found that civilian spouses who experienced PCS moves earned about a little less than $4,000 on average within the year of the move compared to what they were making before the move. Factors that influence larger decreases in pay included the number of children under the age of 6 in the family and also relocation to a new state. And although the effects of PCS moves on spousal income diminished over time, they could still be observed up to 2 years after the PCS move. So this report also outlines implications for families and helping professionals, also for policymakers or military leadership. And our team highly recommends taking a look at it. It's about 2 pages in length. Again, it'll be on this podcast episode's webpage. And now we can move on to our next conversation. With us now is someone I've been lucky enough to work with for the past few years, Molly Herndon. She's the programming coordinator for MFLN's personal finance team, and Molly and her and the personal finance team with MFLN recently held webinars on 2 subject matters that I think weave nicely into this podcast episode topic area. And I thought she could share a bit more about those topics with our listeners today from a personal or family finance point of view. So thanks so much for joining us, Molly.
Thank you for having me.
Would you mind telling our listeners a bit about yourself and your role within the MFLN personal finance team?
Sure. I'm Molly Herndon, and I work with the University of Florida. I'm the program coordinator for the personal finance team, and I develop and coordinate our monthly webinars and podcasts and our weekly blog posts, and I also manage our team's social media activity.
In this episode, we are discussing various community and online resources available to military families when they're transitioning into civilian work or trying to enter into higher education. And your personal finance team recently held a webinar titled Paying for College, the Forever GI Bill and Repayment Plans, which was just chock full of good information. Can you speak about that webinar a bit, or kind of summarize what that was about, or even speak about the Forever GI Bill and changes that were shared in that webinar?
Sure. So we had Lakeisha Rogers from the Veterans Benefit Administration, and she talked about the Forever GI Bill and some of the changes that that brings to the post 9/11 GI benefits. And then the webinar concluded with some general student loan information from Dr. Carrie Johnson from North Dakota State University. So it was a good mix of a look at different ways to pay for educational expenses. So the big thing about the Forever GI Bill is that if your release from active duty was after January 1st, 2013, the 15-year time limit for use of benefits has been removed. And that is also true for a spouse. If you're a spouse using transferred benefits and your active duty spouse left duty before January 1st, you have the 15-year limitation, and that is now removed if they left duty after January 1st, 2013.
Can you speak a bit about what that means for family members of military personnel?
Yes, so that greatly increases the time at which you can use these benefits and the transfer of benefits from the service member to the spouse or the service member's dependents, their children.
I'm trying also to get at, for instance, with our MFLN family development concentration area, we're really, you know, servicing families who have active duty family members. So if that's an option for them to use the GI Bill, then.
Well, if the service member is still in active duty, yes. Yes, they can elect for their dependent or spouse to use those benefits while they're in active duty. Is that your question?
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a veteran. Yeah.
Right. So Molly, can you speak a little bit about maybe some stipulations surrounding the Forever GI Bill? For instance, when service members and or their family members, their children or their spouses can use this?
Sure. So the GI benefits can be transferred to spouses or dependents of the service member. And the Forever GI Bill, the Culmary Act, removes the 15-year time limit for the use of those benefits. So the 15-year time limit was for the use of post-9/11 GI Bill benefits for those whose last discharge or release from active duty is on or after January 1st, 2013. And children of deceased service members who became entitled to post-9/11 GI Bill benefits on or after January 1st, 2013, and all spouses using the Frye Scholarship. So it eliminates that 15-year time limit if you've been released from active duty on or after January 1st, 2013.
Great. So do you want to transition to talking more about the student loans?
Sure.
And the Service Members Civil Relief Act? I know that's something that was talked about in this particular webinar, and I think is just really useful information for those who aren't intimately aware of the details.
Right. So not the only education benefits are not strictly tied to GI benefits. There are other student loan benefits for service members. And one is the Service Member Civil Relief Act, which caps interest rates at 6% for student loans for service members, which is really good because even really great federal loans have interest rates that range between 4% and 7%. And so that's one of the many regulations that are tied to this Service Member Civil Relief Act. They can also have deferments and loan forgiveness programs that are not available to civilians. Service members can elect to defer payment during certain periods of active duty and immediately following active duty. They can also apply for public service loan forgiveness, given they've made 120 on-time qualifying payments after October 1st, 2007. While in a qualifying income-driven or 10-year standard repayment plan. And service members who qualify for an income-driven repayment plan, which are available for federal loans, and service members may qualify for low or no payment amount with the possibility of forgiveness of the remaining balance in 20 to 25 years. So those are some really unique opportunities for repayment or forgiveness of loan debt for service members.
And typically for the Service Member Civil Relief Act, or sometimes it's called the SCRA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that something that service members would typically utilize when they're active duty and might also be going back to school?
Yes, the Service Member Civil Relief Act has a lot of regulations in terms of interest rates and loans. So there's interest rate caps also for credit card APRs. And for the student loan interest rate. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, this is a really great protection that provides service members with some opportunities to seek higher education while they're out accruing as much debt.
And can you speak a bit about differences in repayment plans for civilians and military service members?
It would greatly depend on the type of loan, you know, federal versus private versus subsidized or unsubsidized, and, you know, then the different requirements of the loan. You can find out a lot of information on particular types of loans at the studentaid.ed.gov website.
And what about the HEROES Act waiver? I know that was discussed in the webinar.
It allows folks who are on active duty and so therefore unable to update their information to be waived. So if there's a time limit that would require them to submit proof of the birth of a new child or income changes, but they can't because they're on active duty, they are protected from changes that those would otherwise impact their monthly payment amount. It will be maintained the same amount as a understanding that they're on active duty and cannot provide that information.
Nice. And also, who qualifies, going back to the Forever GI Bill, who qualifies for the Forever GI Bill?
Service members released from active duty on or after January 1st, 2013, and spouses may use the transfer of entitlement, as well as children of deceased service members.
That's wonderful. So if you don't mind, can we kind of jump to another really important topic, which has to do with spousal employment? Military spousal employment. And I know your team also had a webinar that covered information on military family employment. And do you mind telling us a bit about what that was about and if our listeners are interested, what they would expect to be covered going back to the archived webinar?
Yeah, Absolutely. So Eddie Mensah presented information on SECO, the Spouse Education and Career Opportunities Program through Department of Defense and Military OneSource. And he talked a great deal about the programs and services that office offers to military spouses. And then the second half of the webinar was focused on the Small Business Administration's programs through the Office of Veteran Business Affairs. They have several entrepreneurial training programs and information on different entrepreneurial outreach programs that will help educate spouses and help get them connected with different entrepreneurial programs in their communities. And they have their VBOC offices all around the country that provide on-site training, but they also have a lot of training online as well.
What are some others that were talked about or that you can share when it comes to entering or re-entering the workforce?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, many military spouses have careers that don't transfer. And so if they are given frequent PCS orders, they may find it's difficult to hold on to a job for an extended period of time. And then they may be ordered to a location where finding employment at all is rather difficult, you know, a small town or a town that doesn't offer positions in their area of expertise. And so it's a very frustrating and ongoing issue for military spouses.
Was there anything that you, because I know you've done a tremendous amount of research on this and then also participated in the webinar, and just was there anything that you found particularly interesting or new about this subject matter, either about the, you know, Forever GI Bill and or about, you know, spousal employment?
Absolutely. So in the spousal employment webinar, we talked a lot about the coaching program that the SECO office offers for military spouses, and it's pretty intense. It's a really hands-on coaching assistance program that identifies some of the skills, assesses some of the skills the spouse already has and some of the educational background, and tries to match them with portable careers. And they have also expanded their reach with LinkedIn and are offering a free premium LinkedIn membership for military spouses for 1 year, which puts them and groups on LinkedIn of other military spouses so that they can network together and really increases the depth that the LinkedIn services already provide. And so that's unique. And then I was surprised when we were talking with these webinar speakers that all of the SBA programs for veterans are completely open for spouses. And they sort of use the term veteran in all of their programming to identify both the service member and the spouse. And so I was sort of thrown by that because everything on their website says veteran, but everything is also open to the spouse. So that, like, their Boots to Business reboot program and all of their entrepreneurial training programs are completely open to spouses. So I was surprised by that. It's a really great opportunity.
It's similar to either community-based or university-based veterans resource programs. Although they use the term veterans, vast majority are open to military connected families, whether that be spouses or college age children who are military or come from military families. So yeah, that is incredibly interesting. And also great to hear, you know,
absolutely,
that it's more family centered or, you know, couple centered versus just that military veteran, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, if any of our listeners would want to find out more information about these topics, where would you direct them? I know you said about the resources, the SBA veterans programs, and, you know, you've given some great keywords for Google searches or any kind of online searches, but where else would you direct them?
There's a really great federal student loan guide for members of the U.S. Armed Services that is on the studentaid.ed.gov website. And it's a PDF. It's, I believe, 2 pages. And it's a wealth of information about the different student loan programs. And it's very easy to read and very easy to follow. And it has great information on student loans. The SECO website at myseco.militaryonesource.mil is also great. And it gives you the details about the coaching program and the other different programs that they offer for military spouses. And then, yes, as you just mentioned, the SBA.gov website has all of the Office of Veterans Business Affairs programs that we've been talking about today listed there.
And of course, the 2 webinars that we referenced earlier, And we'll have more information about that at the end of today's podcast episode. And if you go on to our podcast episode webpage, we'll also have listed everything that all of the resources that Molly talked about today and direct links to those webinars in case you as our listeners would like to check them out. Thank you so much, Molly, for this info. Is there anything else you want to add today?
No, thank you for letting me share this.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Great, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you'd like to hear more episodes from Anchored, check out the links provided on our website, or you can go directly to iTunes. Just enter MFLN Anchored Podcast in your search engine to get you there. We offer continuing education credits for most of our programming. Information about that can be found on our website, or you can just email our team at mflnfamilydevelopment@gmail.com. We hope you will join us next time. This material is based on work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy. U.S. Department of Defense award number is 2015-48770-24368.